Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. The television series Downton Abbey has been nominated for more Emmys than any other foreign show in the history of the award. The show has ended, but the story is not over. Downton Abbey's creator, executive producer, and sole writer, Oscar winner Lord Julian Fellowes, has been busy working on the show's much-anticipated film. This new chapter of the Downton saga begins in 1927 with some familiar faces and voices.
No maid, no valet, no nanny even.
It's 1927. We're modern folk.
Nanny will take care of Marigold, and Anna can look after you.
Really? Can she?
Of course. Just like the old days. Granny's here and Isabel, and we're paying a call this afternoon on Princess Mary.
We watch as the Crowley family and its staff must ready the manor for the arrival of, who else? King George V and his wife Mary. From the first blimey to Daisy's feisty real talk to the magic moment when the Dowager Countess, played by Maggie Smith, says that Machiavelli was kind of underappreciated. You know you are in for a rollicking good time. The film comes out September 20th today, and I'm thrilled that it brings Julian Fellowes to our studio. Welcome.
Oh, it's very nice of you to ask me.
When did you decide there would be a Downton Abbey movie?
Well, this depends who you ask, actually, because I now realize from various interviews we've been doing that Gareth Neem really thought there would be a film from, you know, while we were doing the sixth series, the last series. And of course, I knew there'd been talk of it, but it never occurred to me that there would be. It seemed too difficult to round up all the actors. They'd all gone off to these extraordinary jobs all over the place. They were on Broadway. They were doing this, this, and this. And anyway, you know, some of my favourites here. I mean, I was obsessed with Mad Men. I couldn't watch anything else for a time. There was never a film of that. Mind you, I think it'd be a jolly good film. I was rather sorry there wasn't a film. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it didn't seem inevitable. And then the sort of buzz went on. And I suppose about a year after the end of the series, I began to realise that perhaps there would be a film. So I'd better start thinking about what was going to be in it.
Well, as you began to think about what would be in it, what was the biggest difference in taking something that had been episodic television, that had become part of people's lives, part of their routines, and then writing one piece, one big narrative piece, as opposed to the episodic way
of
writing?
Well, you're quite right. I mean, that is the key issue, because you've got two elements, really. One is not everyone expects a big story every week in a series. They probably get two or three in the whole season. And the rest of the time, they're in other people's stories. Mm-hmm. And also, you don't have to complete every story every week. You can have this story completed, if you like, but that one can go on for 5 weeks, you know. So it's completely different discipline. Whereas I felt we had to continue with the multi-story style, because that is Downton. I didn't want to change it too fundamentally. The difference being that every character in the film had to have a story, and they all had to be resolved. So, you know, it was quite a sort of, I wouldn't say feat, as that making it too big, but but that was that was my sort of challenge.
How receptive were the actors to coming back?
Well, they were all actually rather keen. The problem was not convincing them, but logistics. And I mean, we had people flying back and forth to go on with a show on Broadway. We had people in the air practically all the time as they were finishing off this scene. And then they'd have 4 days off and come whizzing back and do 4 days of Downton, and then whoop, back they were again. So I think it was very draining for them. And I think they were all very good sports to do it.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine, though, that could give the set some interesting energy. Because you're there, you just have that moment to get this thing.
Get it done. Oh, mind you, all filming is like that. All filming has a kind of excitement because you've just got to get it. And it's like weather. You know, the weather is the element you can't control. And we had this great military parade as part of the film. And the one thing we all sort of lay awake at night with our heads on the pillow, just praying for decent weather. And in the end, we got it. We had 3 or 4 fabulous days. It was in September. There was no, believe me, in England, no likelihood that we would get 4 continuous days of good weather, but we did. And I love that sequence in the picture.
My guest is Lord Julian Fellowes. We're talking about the new Downton Abbey film. So the action takes place in just a few days. The king is coming to the manor. How common is it, was it, for a king and queen to drop by an aristocrat's manor?
Well, they were quite keen on making these tours and showing themselves. They took their jobs very seriously. The First World War had dealt a terrific blow to monarchy as a principle. The Russian emperor had been murdered. Mm-hmm. The German emperor had fallen. The Austrian emperor had fallen. All the kings, princes and dukes of Germany had gone. You know, the whole principle had been rattled. And they had the job of kind of calming everything down, making sure that people still perceived them as the center of British life. And they did it. They managed it. By the time of the King's Silver Jubilee in the 30s, he was immensely popular. So, you know, I think they worked very hard. But it wasn't that uncommon, which is the answer to your question, for them to show up in a county. I mean, usually in one of the great houses of that county, or two or three of them. But they would attend things that the public could see them at, not just balls and dinners where the county would see them, but not the public, general public. But they would make a point of attending things the general public could see. So they did, you know, they did good work on behalf of the principal.
In the movie, I don't want to give away too much, one of the characters says, "We must defend Downton's honor." Like it's a person. Like that the house is a person.
Well, I think that Downton is a person. I mean, I think the house is one of the main characters in the show. And that was very important to me, that we shouldn't, you know, sometimes when television comedies or whatever become films, everyone goes to Honolulu or whatever it is. But I didn't feel that was right for us, because that would mean leaving one of our main characters back home. I mean, the house is a main character. And one thing I love in the film is the way the house has stepped up to it, because suddenly, these huge rooms and everything, you get such mileage out of them on the big screen. And that sweeping shot of the house at the beginning, which is really enough to make us all burst into tears.
As we said in the intro, it starts in 1927. Why did you decide to pick up a year after the series ended? You could have gone 10 years in the future. You could have started the next day.
Well, I didn't start the next day because I didn't feel the general strike, which is a very serious topic, was quite right for our level of treatment. That was one of my reasons for wanting to have a year, 18 months gap. But also, I wanted Edith, particularly, and Bertie to have kind of bedded down, so they weren't newlyweds anymore, and they had a sense of what their life consisted of. Because, as you know, that is part of one of the themes of the film. And also, Mary to be settled in her life with Henry and all of that stuff. I didn't want to unpick the happiness that we'd created in the television series and suddenly say, oh, by the way, now Mary's unhappily married. I didn't want to do that. And I thought we had to go with their happiness. But, you know, as always with Edith, of course, it's not quite as simple as that.
Would you kindly explain for our listeners the general strike?
The general strike was in 1926. It was an enormous strike of started with the miners, but it spread to many, many, many other industries. And the establishment made it a gallant thing to fight the strike. So everyone's sons and daughters were driving ambulances and taxis and buses and this and that and the other. One of my aunts was a ticket girl on the bus while her boyfriend, who was at Oxford at the time, drove the bus. I mean, it was all that. Now, that wouldn't happen now, because now far more of the public would be on the side of the strikers. And that would be very difficult to organize. And it wouldn't be seen as a kind of glamorous thing to help to break the strike. So I think it presents probably too great a problem to dramatize, and certainly for the sort of comedy drama that Downton is. In the end, the strike essentially fizzled out, and it didn't make a great change, really.
In the film, it really expands on the gay characters, and we get to have a sense of their life in 1920s England. Why did you want to explore the life of a gay man in the 1920s in a very sensitive way, I think.
Well, I think it's important. I mean, that sounds rather portentous, but I think it is important that the young particularly understand how far we've come. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's so busy picking holes at the moment and everything's always terrible. But it's perhaps time sometimes to stop and think, well, wait a minute. This bit at least is a good deal better than it used to be. And the fact, I mean, when I had a gay story in the series, I had letters saying, are you seriously telling me that being gay was a crime in 1912? 1912? It was a crime in 1963. And they've forgotten that. And there you're trying to live your life. I mean, there's no reason to believe that there's any lower percentage of people were gay in 1927 than are gay today. The difference being that 98% of them were having to live a lie and are having to hide their feelings and not fulfill themselves in many, many, many cases. And if they did, it was all cloak and dagger and behind closed doors and all that stuff. Or you could be arrested. You could do time in prison. And I just wanted, although we do give Thomas Barrow a little bit more fun than he usually has, there's also the downside of it, because I think we shouldn't forget that these people were going through all that very recently, and we deliberately intercut it with the banquet for the royal couple, of course.
My guest is Lord Julian Fellowes. We are talking about the Downton Abbey movie. We've talked about your writing and your producing credits, but you are an actor as well.
An actor for many years.
How does and did being an actor affect your writing of a screenplay?
Well, I think being an actor is very, very helpful when you're writing dialogue. I say that without any pretensions, because I don't think it matters terribly whether you were a good actor or a bad actor. But either way, you have read a lot of scripts. And the one thing an actor can do instinctively is recognize whether this script is sayable, whether it's the whole thing is playable. Mm-hmm. And that's why I always feel, I've directed a couple of films, and I feel when an actor comes up to you and says, I don't think this speech is right, blah, 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 blah. Now, their solution is possibly not the solution. But the fact that there is a problem is almost always correct. And I don't really understand directors who don't listen to actors, because they have this instinct as to how to occupy these speeches, how to make them their own. And I think that has been very helpful. And I would like to say, this is pretentious, but I'll go for it anyway, that I think I do write reasonably sayable dialogue.
It's interesting. We've talked about film. We've talked about television, stage, and soon you'll have something coming out with audio. They're all very different mediums, each with their opportunities and their limitations. What does a project need to have? What characteristics for you to be interested in doing it, regardless of the medium?
I think I'm a teller of stories, really. I think that's what it comes down to. And I think whichever medium I'm working in, I'm telling stories. They all have different pleasures, you know. I mean, I've had two opening nights of musicals. I've written what they rather misleadingly call the book for. And they opened on Broadway, and they were both successful.
School of Rock and
Mary Poppins. And they were both successful. And those opening nights on Broadway were like nothing you've ever experienced. I mean, really extraordinary, extraordinary evenings and wonderful fun. And I love that. I've written movies and I won the Oscar. That was terrific. I can recommend that to anyone. And, and then I've written novels, which I love, because unlike writing a television or a film where you're working with a kind of committee, you're working with a single editor. And it's really your voice that your editor is helping to shape. I enjoyed that very, very much. And probably in my novels, there is more of me. And then they're much more autobiographical than the stuff I've written for the screen. So, each one thing has a different pleasure, really.
Is there anything in Downton Abbey, the movie, that's autobiographical?
No, I don't think so, really. I mean, there are stories in it that I've heard people tell, and there was one quote which was repeated to me by someone who'd was told by a member of the family when some members were coming to stay. And that's when Princess Mary says, try not to paint anything. They're sick of the smell of new paint. And that came from life.
Lady Mary has an interesting, she poses an interesting question in the film about why do we do all this? Why do we have all this pomp? Why do we have this big house? Why is this important? People in England now ask those questions about the royal family. Why do we have this? Why is there all this pomp? Why is there all of this effort?
Well, I think, I mean, to some extent, we all ask why we are living the lives we're living at some point or other. But I think it was particularly true in those years after the First World War, in the 20s, 30s, and then the Second World War was for many families the coup de grace, and they never went back. They'd moved out to let the army or the navy come in to use them, and they never went back. That wasn't true of all. Some families stayed on, including, I'm happy to say, the Carnarvons at Highclere, where we're filming. So, you know, they did get through it. Some people got through it, but they got through it by adapting and by learning to live differently, by having a different kind of life going on. And I felt it was wrong not to have Mary question at all the life they're leading, because in the sort of stage of her story, we are watching her take over Downton, really, in front of us. Mm-hmm. And she is going to be Queen of Downton for certainly until her son grows up, but very possibly rather longer than that. And if she's going to do that, I think we needed to know she was sort of aware of the size of the task, of the bigness of what she's taking on, and give her some doubts. You know, she's an intelligent woman. She must have some questioning as to whether this is a sensible thing to do. And I just felt it gave a sort of dimension to her decision to go on with it that made it believable, really.
Down Abbey opens tonight. My guest has been Lord Julian Fellowes. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, well, it was very nice of you to ask me, really.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.